Check.
Nope.
Okay.
Anybody else need an outline?
Yes, please.
That'll work.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey.
Thank you.
It's only 12 minutes after Lloyd left you a big classroom. A big time for your class.
No, I just set it up there. Set it up there.
Josephus.
All right, it's good to see you. Happy that you're here. As it's already been emphasized in the announcements and Jeff's prayer, we've got a lot of sickness, don't we? There's a lot of folks that are not well right now. We need to keep them in our prayers. Our ladies, we've got a small group of ladies that are traveling back. Keep them in our prayers as well. They have a safe return home. Happy that you're here. We are looking at the book and our Bibles, The Eternal Kingdom. Just a brief review. The first chapter we looked at the fullness of time. And in the fullness of time, we were looking at the right time, the right place, the right plan, the right man came. Just at the right time, the fullness of time. Jesus came into the world to finish his Father's work that he had given him. And after he had finished that work, you remember he ascended back to heaven. The culture at that particular time, when we're looking at Rome, was favorable to some point for mankind. Rome had ensured a common language, common currency, an easy mode as far as traveling. You could easily take the gospel to various places because Rome had great highways, great roads. But sadly, the culture was corrupt. Immorality ran rampant in Rome. Both Jew and Gentile needed Christ, and they needed a Savior. They needed salvation. Lost souls who were searching for the truth could definitely be placed in the Lord's body after they discovered the gospel, obeyed the gospel. But we also talked about a period, you remember, where mystery religions, and if you haven't read that in your books, go back and read that. But with the mystery religions, you got to understand that Rome was a melting pot for many people. With all these mystery religions, man trying to identify, find his place in the world, he just may pick out a mystery religion. But there was no true happiness found in those things, was there? Only true joy, contentment, salvation was found in Jesus Christ. Of course, Jesus encountered opposition. As far as opposition, without the mystery religions, opposition with regards to religious sects. Who were some of the individuals or groups that we looked at 2 weeks ago? Pharisees, okay, we looked at the Pharisees. Who else?
Sadducees.
We looked at the Sadducees.
The Essenes.
Okay. Anybody else? The Zealots, okay. So those were the ones that we primarily looked at last week. If you haven't had an opportunity to look at those groups, please do so. Tonight we are going to be spending our time discussing the historical authors who wrote about the events. These individuals were not Christians. They're just authors. They're historians. But they wrote enough and shared enough to give credibility, if you would, not that God needs, you know, non-inspired authors to give credit to the church, but it reinforces the fact that there is a man, Jesus. He was crucified. He established his kingdom, the church. And let's look at this. Go ahead and turn to chapter 2. That's where we're going to begin tonight. It's chapter 2, followed by the name of Josephus. Josephus. Josephus was born around 37 to 38 A.D. He was born, now if you think about it, that timeline. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Clicker. There we go. Thank you, Jeff.
One more.
All right. He was born, folks, right in the middle of the Christian movement. Look at that date. The church was established around AD 33, wasn't it? So, you know, he was born about 4 or 5 years after the church was established. At the age of 26, he visited Rome, and he vowed to bring about better relationships between the Jew and the Gentile. He was well respected by Titus, a Roman general, and eventually an emperor. So let's go back. You have your books. Here's where I want us to begin. You see where it says Josephus in chapter 2? I want you to read, not the first paragraph, but right, and I'm hoping your book looks like mine, where it says the Roman numeral 1, it says Josephus. Who wants to read a couple paragraphs for me where it says one of the most brilliant writers? Who wants to take off and read? Lloyd, go right ahead.
Okay. Do you want me to go back to the original beginning there?
Just where it says one of the most brilliant writers.
Okay.
Start right there.
Okay. One of the most brilliant writers of the first century was a Jew named Josephus, the son of Matthias. He took the name of Clavius in honor of the Flavian emperors. He was born in 37 or 38 A.D. When 26 years old, he visited Rome and was so impressed, he spent the rest of his life trying to bring about better relations between the Jews and the Romans. He was so highly respected by the Romans that he was with Titus when Jerusalem was destroyed in A.D. 70. That's interesting.
It is.
Later, he wrote the history of the event in 7 books entitled History of the Jewish War. He also wrote Jewish Antiquities and his Autobiography.
Okay, take one more paragraph for me, Lloyd.
Okay, concerning Jesus, Josephus says, at that time lived Jesus a wise man, if he may be called a man, where he performed many wonderful works. He was a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him many Jews and Gentiles. This was the Christ. And when Pilate, at the instigation of the chief men among us, had condemned him to the cross, they who before had conceived an affection for him did not cease to adhere to him. For on the third day he appeared to them alive again, a divine prophet, having foretold these many other wonderful things concerning him. And the sect of the Christians so-called from him subsists at this time.
Okay, so here we are when we're talking about Josephus. And again, at the age of 26, he is vowing to be a peacemaker, basically. Bring about better relations between Jew and the Roman world. As a matter of fact, it seems like the Romans received him well, doesn't it? I mean, you can't get any higher an association than a general and eventually an emperor, okay? And when Jerusalem fell,
he was there.
He was there, okay? He was an eyewitness. He was the man with the, you know, with the ability to document, you know, the facts as they had occurred, okay? And so, you know, he's got a little bit of credibility. When we talk about when he was born, we think about Paul's missionary journeys, okay? So here he is. He's born around 37 A.D. So by the time he's around 26 years of age, where are we at about that time? early 60s. Yeah, about 60 AD, 63 AD, somewhere in there. What in the world is going on in the religious world about that time frame?
Turmoil.
Okay, there's turmoil. Okay? Think about the Apostle Paul. Where's the Apostle Paul about that time? He's a prisoner in Rome, isn't he? Yeah, about that time. He's a prisoner in Rome. Go back and look at whenever Ephesians, Philippians, and Colossians, when that was written. That's about the time frame that he was in prison. Okay? This is also about the same time that Luke was finished writing the book of Acts, and it was circulated to the churches throughout the Middle East, okay, and Asia, Macedonia, Galatia, okay? So all I'm asking you to do is when you look at the dates, go back and look at Bible characters. Try to figure out what in the world is going on in the religious world at this time, okay? So here we're seeing one image of, you know, of Josephus, you know, in the height of his career, you know, writing and being friends with Roman generals, rubbing shoulders with politicians, with you know, with the rich and the famous and the powerful there in Rome. And we also see the church is has been established now for about 30 years, okay? It is well documented. When Titus, the son of Vespasian, whom I might add was a Roman general and eventually a Roman emperor, he entrusted Josephus, as we've already stated, with being his right-hand man with regards to writing the history or the accounts of Jerusalem falling. We see his work in the Jewish war and antiquities, okay? Maybe some of you have in your library, I know we do downstairs, a copy of Josephus, his work. Okay, now understand, when you're reading it, you know, he's not a Christian, okay? He's just basically just eyes on what's going on the ground, okay? And he's sharing that information. Just as Lloyd read to us and shared with us. Who's he writing about here? Who's he talking about concerning who? Jesus, right? Yeah, he's writing about Jesus, okay? Go ahead, Lloyd, were you going to say something?
He also, being with this Titus, he was there as a witness when Jerusalem was burnt.
Yes, 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 absolutely. Now, we're going to get into another character when you're talking about Rome burning down in a little while.
Yeah.
Fellow by the name of Nero. Okay? Yes?
It's interesting to me, and it kind of makes you wonder, you know, Josephus is stating himself, you know, that on the third day he appeared to them alive again. How can somebody see that and not believe in that? Like, how can you see that? And,
right.
You know, even the most skeptical mind,
he didn't see
how
it.
Can you see somebody die, know that they are dead, mm-hmm. and then see them raised later and not wonder for yourself, well, how did that happen?
Right.
Yeah. Josephus didn't see it.
Yeah, he didn't actually see it.
He wasn't born until four or five years later.
He was close enough to the cross, closer than we were. He probably, no doubt, met people who had seen it.
I mean, believes it enough that he
exactly.
comfortable enough
how
to
you,
words.
Yes, you were still there, you know, to understand that there's enough conversation, there's enough preaching, there's enough teaching that's going on. Guys, this had to be an exciting time.
Yeah.
Now, seriously, think about this. Can you imagine? Can you imagine, you know, sitting beside someone and we're sitting there and we're singing songs and then, you know, then after worship, you're talking, hey, come over here, I want to meet you somebody. They were there the day that Jesus was crucified. He was there. And you might have some poor Jew that's just like, yeah, I'm ashamed. I didn't stand up for it. But I'm so glad I obeyed the gospel. Folks, seriously, It's real. And I get your point, Amanda. He was close enough to the action that no doubt he would have rubbed shoulders with, but we talk about rubbing shoulders with generals, you know, and emperors. He would have rubbed shoulders, no doubt, with people, you know, who were close to the cross.
Well, he trusted it enough to put it in his works and his writings.
Exactly. Exactly. Gail.
If Josephus was a thorn in the side of people that try to disclaim the Bible today, he was there. He wasn't anything religious.
The next paragraph we'll get into that.
Okay. And the thing about it is when he gets to fall of Jerusalem, he gets very, very detailed.
Yes.
About that, to the point. We see, read it in here, it says, yeah, Jerusalem fell, okay? But it was pretty bad. The way it
oh, yes, absolutely.
They read your own kids.
It was horrific. Okay, someone read the next paragraph for me, will you? Who's got it? David, you got it.
This passage has been rejected by some scholars as an interpolation on the grounds that it does not sound like an unbelieving Jew, such as Josephus. It is also said to be out of place in the context, for here Josephus was discussing seditions. In defense of the passage, it may be said, it appears in every copy of Josephus.
Right.
That has come down to us and was quoted twice by Eusebius as early as 315 AD. In a North Slavic manuscript of Josephus, there is the description of a tumult made on account of Jesus, and the statement reads, at that time a man appeared, if he can be called a man. His nature and his body were human, but his appearance was more than human. He performed miracles through some invisible power. Some said of him that he was our first lawgiver, Moses, risen from the dead, and making himself known by many healings and magic works. Others thought that he was sent by God. I personally, in view of his whole life, should not call him a messenger of God. More likely, the original statement of Josephus and its setting is in harmony with the context.
Okay, so, you know, haters will hate and doubters will doubt, you know. So, you know, there's people that come along just trying to discredit, you know, with what is being said. But still yet, when, you know, Amanda, when we're talking about being close to the action, here's Eusebius, okay, at 315 A.D. Now, we're going to at some point in time get into what they call church fathers, okay, or looking at a period of history where, you know, after the church was established and you know, you begin to see a departure from New Testament teaching, okay? But you still yet see, and I've got a book in my office where you've got some of their writings, and man, it is really interesting. You know, when the deacons were actually taking the Lord's Supper to people's homes, and I'm like, wow, we do that. Well, they did that too, you know? So, and it validates your identity as a member of the Lord's church, okay? That you can trace the history back to what they were doing then, okay? But anyway, so again, you know, there are some that are skeptics and just say, no, it's not true. But nevertheless, you know, the content is still true, okay, with regards to who Jesus is and what he did. Okay, someone else take the next paragraph for us. Who wants to take the next paragraph? Sam, please.
From these accounts, it seems clear that in this place, Josephus did make reference to Jesus, but that some person very early tried to improve his statements. However, in another passage that has been less questioned as authentic, Josephus refers to Jesus when he was describing the death of James. He said, but this younger Ananias, who took to a high priesthood, was a bold man in his temper and very insolent. When therefore he thought he now had a proper opportunity to exercise his authority, he assembled the Sanhedrin and brought before them the brother of Jesus, who was called Christ, whose name was James, and some other. When he had formed an accusation against them, he delivered them to be stoned.
Oh, okay. You know, he's giving you accurate details surrounding the death of the Lord's brother, right? Okay, and you can go back and you can cross-reference priest, high priest at this time, okay, and say, well, yep, this is matching up. This is all lining up, okay? Even if he didn't mean to get it right, you know, all you got to do is tell the truth. And if you tell the truth, it will, you know, it will square with divine truth, okay, of what is being said. Okay, someone else take the next paragraph here. Who's got that? It's a rather long one. Next two. That way we can just finish out this section. It's Dale, you got it?
Referring to John the Baptist, Jesus says that some of the Jews were of opinion that God had suffered Herod's whole army to be destroyed as a just punishment on him for the death of John called the Baptist. For Herod had killed him, who was a just man, and had called upon the Jews to be baptized and to practice virtue, exercising both justice toward men and piety toward God. For so would baptism be acceptable to God, if they had made use of it, not for the expiation of their sins, but for the purity of the body, the mind, being first purified by righteousness. And many coming to him, for they were wonderfully taken with his discourse, Herod was seized with apprehensions, lest that his authority should be led into sedition against him, for they seemed capable of undertaking anything in his direction. Herod therefore thought it better to take him off before any disturbance happened than to run the risk of affairs and of repenting when he should be too late to remedy disorder. Being taken up upon his suspicion of Herod and being sent bound to the castle of Machaerus, just mentioned, he was slain there. The Jews were of opinion that the destruction of Herod's army was punishment upon him for that action, God being displeased with him. This passage has been accepted as genuine, even by the most critical. It is a quote by Origen, Eusebius, and Jerome. In this context, Josephus corroborated many facts recorded in our Gospel accounts.
Now this is interesting, because now he's talking about who? John the Baptist, or John the one who was immersed.
Russo.
And the immersing one. So now he's talking about this, and this little tradition, you know, with regards to a discussion regarding why Herod, you know, succumbed to destruction. He fell to his knees. What were the Jews saying behind the scene? It's because you did what? You killed John the Baptist. Now, I think that's interesting. So, and that's not just us, you know, just making up something. You know, that's what's going on in the rumor mill at this time. Okay, that's the talk on the streets. Okay, hey, the reason, you know, we're taking a beating, the reason Herod is paying a heavy price right now is because you killed John the Baptist. Okay, and it tells us a little bit about John the Baptist. Now, he wasn't just some fly-by-night charlatan, okay? There were people, lots and lots of people, that sat at the feet of John the Baptist, okay? Listened to his preaching. Were baptized by John the Baptist, okay? He was a powerful preacher, okay? So, you know, I just think this is interesting. And then you go on and you talk about, Eusebius and Jerome, and various other church fathers as they're writing about the accounts that Josephus wrote about. You know, we're looking at it probably 150 years later, but still yet, you know, it gives teeth to what is being written and what is being said here, okay? So, and this, guys, this isn't, you know, if a person, now how would you deal with this? How would you deal with an individual that's a doubter? I don't believe what God's word says. You know, it's just made up. It's hogwash. You'll run into people like that. Okay? Well then, okay, do you believe history? You know, with regards to documentation that we see with regards to the Revolutionary War and statements that are made, pen on paper. Well, yeah, I believe that. Okay, just a second, Imogen. You know, do you believe, you know, these writings existed, and you go back and name any great literary, you know, author or work? Well, yeah, I believe that. Well, would you believe, we'd be willing to believe Josephus? Oh, I don't know about that. Now, why? Now, why is that? The subject matter. Okay? You see, if I admit that they're right, then I also have to admit what else is right?
The Bible.
The Bible is right. See what I'm saying? Right. Go ahead, Imogene.
When Josephus was in Rome, he was with all of the generals.
Okay. Okay.
Was he impressed with them, or did he try to impress upon them to change?
Oh, I don't think he was trying to change anybody. He was never converted. He was a Jew. He was just a historian. Okay? He was your man on the street, just reporting, you know, if they had a news. You know, he's just a man on the street. He's just reporting the affairs, all that's going on. That's all he is as a historian. Okay? He's not trying to convert anybody, you know, and he's certainly not going to be swayed, it seems, to be converted. Okay? He's just there doing his job, you know, recording the events and the affairs as they're transpiring.
Was he impressed with all of this?
Oh, I'm sure he had to be. I mean, impressed, probably horrified too. You know, because it was death. It was carnage. You know, it was Fox's Book of Martyrs is an interesting book. But when you start looking at the way that, you know, these people, they died, you know, it was a very bloody affair, you know. But, you know, yeah, it. I don't know. Impressed, I'd say disgusted. You know, had to be. Any other questions or thoughts? Okay, let's move on to Tacitus. Okay, Tacitus. Okay, who wants to read the first paragraph here with regards to
Tacitus?
Who's got it? Sorry, Tacitus. Raymond, you got it. Go ahead.
Curius Cornelius Tacitus, who wrote about the year 100, had a strong dislike for the Christians. This, however, makes his testimony even stronger. In discussing the life of Nero, the accusation that he burned the city and blamed it on the Christians, Tacitus says, "But neither all human help nor the liberality of the emperor nor all the atonements presented to the gods avail to abate the infamy he lay under of having ordered the city to be set on fire. To suppress, therefore, this common rumor, Nero procured others to be accused and inflicted exquisite punishment upon those people who were in abhorrence for their crimes and were commonly known by the name of Christians. They had their denomination from Christus, who in the reign of Tiberius was put to death as a criminal by the procurator Pontius Pilate. This pernicious superstition, though checked for a while, broke out again and spread not only over Judea, the source of this evil, but reached the city also. Where there flowed from all quarters all things vile and shameful, and where they find shelter and encouragement. At first they were only apprehended who confessed themselves of that sect. Afterwards a vast multitude discovered by them, all of which were condemned, not so much for the crime of burning the city as for the enmity of man to mankind. Their executions were so contrived as to expose them to derision and contempt. Some were covered with the skins of wild beasts and torn to pieces by dogs. Some were crucified. Others, having been daubed over with combustible materials, were set up as lights in the nighttime and thus burned to death. Nero made use of his own gardens as a theater upon this occasion, and also exhibited the diversions of the circus. Sometimes standing in the crowd as a spectator, in the habit of a charioteer, at other times driving a chariot himself, until at length these men, though really criminal and deserving exemplary punishment, began to be commiserated as people who were destroyed, not out of regard to the public welfare, but only to gratify the cruelty of one man.
To gratify the cruelty of one man. Who wants to read the next two paragraphs, and then I want to share something with you. It's not in our books here, real quick. Okay. You got it, Samantha? Go ahead.
This testimony, which is unchallenged historically, states that 1, Christ is the founder of the denomination of Christians. 2, Christ was put to death as a criminal by Pontius Pilate. 3, his death took place while Tiberius was emperor. Therefore, he must have been born under the reign of Augustus. 4, Christianity, this pernicious superstition, began in Judea and was suppressed for a time, then broke out again and reached Rome before Tacitus wrote his annals. 5, Christians were persecuted in Rome as early as AD 64. 6, vast multitudes were executed to gratify the cruelty of one man, Nero. 7, Tacitus recognized they were innocent of the crimes charged against them. This testimony confirms the facts of the Gospels, and since there were large numbers of Christians scattered all over the empire as early as 30 years after the death of Christ, the Book of Acts is also vindicated in the theory that Christianity was a synthesis of the mystery religions, or the result of a growth of myths, must be a necessity for evolution.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. So, you know, I went ahead and put up here just some of the facts regarding him. And you see the last bullet in his work, we learned 7 things that support Christ and Christianity. That's not coming from the Bible. That's coming from an uninspired writer. Okay, keep that in mind as you're reading this stuff. Let's talk a little bit about Nero, perhaps one of the most infamous of Roman emperors, Nero Claudius Caesar, 37 to 68 A.D., he ruled Rome from 54 A.D. until his death by suicide 14 years later. And this comes from the history, history.com. But it goes on and it talks about he was the best known for his debaucheries, political murders, persecution of Christians, and his passion for music that led to probably an apocryphal rumor that he fiddled while Rome burned during the Great Fire of 64 A.D. Nero took his familiar name when he was adopted at the age of 13 by his great-uncle. The Emperor Claudius, his father, had died being the future emperor when he was only 2. Nero's mother, Agrippina the Younger, had married Claudius after arranging the death of her second husband and was the driving force behind her son's adoption. She arranged for Nero to wed Claudius's daughter, Octavia, in 53. Further sidelining the emperor's son, Britannicus, upon Claudius's sudden death in 54, classical sources suggest that Agrippina fed him poisoned mushrooms. The 17-year-old Nero ascended to the throne. Okay. In his first 5 years as emperor, Nero gained the reputation were being politically generous, promoting power sharing with the Senate, and ending closed-door political trials. Though he generally pursued his own passions, and he left the ruling up to the 3 key advisors, the Stoic philosopher Seneca, prefect Burrus, and ultimately Agrippina, eventually Seneca encouraged Nero to stop to step out from his domineering mother's shadow. She turned against him, promoting her stepson, Britannicus, as the true heir of the throne, and protesting Nero's affair with his friend's wife, Poppaea, Sabina. But Nero had learned his mother's lessons well. Britannicus soon died under a dubious circumstance. Surprise. And in 59, after a failed plot to drown her in a collapsible boat, Nero had Agrippina stabbed to death in her villa. The Empress Octavia was exiled and executed. And in 62, Nero and Poppaea were married. 3 years later, in what the Roman historian Tacitus described as a casual outburst of rage, Nero killed her with a single kick to the belly. Nice guy, right? I mean, they're all wackadoodles, right? You know, this is, I feel like this is watching The Godfather here. You know, This is crazy. Now, the fire. The fire. Okay, following his mother's death, Nero gave himself fully to his long-standing artistic and aesthetic passions. At private events beginning in 59, he sang and performed on a lyre and encouraged members of the upper class to take dancing lessons. He ordered public games to be held every 5 years in Rome and trained as an athlete himself, competing as a charioteer. His most lasting artistic legacy, though, was his recreation of Rome falling in the fire that destroyed most of the city. Early in the morning of June 19th of 64, a blaze broke out in the shops around Circus Maximus and quickly spread throughout the whole city. Over the next 9 days, three of Rome's 14 districts were destroyed, and an additional seven were severely damaged. Several classical sources place Nero on the roof of his palace during the fire, dressed in stage garb and singing from the Greek epic, The Sack of Ilium. Rumors quickly circulated that the emperor had started the fire to clear land for an expanded palace complex, for a palace complex on the Palestinian hill. Whatever responsibility he actually bore for the disaster, Nero deflected attention by blaming members of the fledgling Christian religion for the fire. He ordered all manner of creative and brutal persecutions. Some were condemned to be dressed in animal skins, as we read, and torn apart by dogs, while others were burned to death at the nighttime, and they were lit up. They were basically lampposts. In his garden is what they were. Guys, can you imagine such a thing? Can you imagine such a thing? Lloyd, go ahead.
This whole thing we don't want to lose. We don't want to lose the idea of what all this is coming about. But this is all power.
Mm-hmm.
It was all power.
Yes.
And you look at the people that have evolved from that over the centuries, and you got in that group. People.
Yes.
More power, and do anything to get that power.
Right. They're literally, you know, drunk on power,
yeah.
And they'll stop at nothing, you know, to not only maintain their power, you know, but to progress in their power.
Then we see what the Christians were up against.
They were the scapegoat.
Yeah.
If you're looking for. I don't know. Someone used the term a patsy,
yeah.
To blame it on, not your mom. You know, but, you know, they were the ones that were going to fall on the sword, literally, okay, and by the sword. Oh, it's awful, Dale. You know, death is awful no matter in what form it comes, but boy, I tell you what, you know, you think about, you know, we talk about it because it's close to us, the Holocaust and the way the Jews were treated. Okay, and the experiments that were performed on those people to kill them, but Nero was doing the same thing. I mean, putting skins on them, and it was just for fun, you know, and have dogs to attack them. Yes, go ahead.
How many innocent, totally innocent?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happened.
Right. Exactly.
Murder is murder.
It is exactly, exactly. I just couldn't imagine Nero standing at his palace, overlooking his garden. And you overlook your garden, and on poles, there are Christians bound to them, and they're on fire. That's how he lit his garden. I mean, that is just, oh, you know. Well, who said the smell? Hey, you know, listen. There was so much death and there was so much blood on their hands, it was probably normal at this point in time. I hate to say it. But, you know, it was, you know, Paul talks about their hearts being hardened to the point where there's no sensation. They're without feeling. Paul said that in Ephesians, that they are without feeling. And when you read things like this, they have to be. Their hearts have to be so hard and callous. Dale.
I deal with a lot of burn patients, and there's nothing worse. But it's, you know, the Book of Martyrs, you get to read that, it really makes us ashamed. Mm-hmm. We think we have it hard. And what those people went through, it wasn't a quick death.
Mm-hmm.
And what they went through to stand up for the truth should make us ashamed.
I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell myself. I found myself with one of those moments like, man, you got to be ashamed of yourself walking out of the house tonight and coming to services. You know, it's like, well, we had chicken on Saturday. We had hamburgers on Sunday. You know, we had, and it's the same, you get into that, right? You know, and it's like, and I'm walking to the car. And I'm like, dude, what are you complaining about? You know, you're complaining what you'll eat. Some people don't even have anything to eat. You understand what I'm saying? And I got ashamed. I mean, I just felt like I needed that, you know? And then we read something like this, Dale, you know, and it's like, are you kidding me? You don't have a problem. You don't have a problem, okay? Okay, I got to take Imogen. She's had her hand up and... I don't know, Imogene. I don't know. You just use your imagination. You know, they were. It would be equivalent to sending a person out in the ocean, and you know, putting a bag full of chum around their neck. You know, and just you're shark bait. You're just shark bait. You know, David, did you have your hand up? Someone else.
The more you're wrong.
Right, right. Yeah, me thinketh you protesteth too much. Right. I think I read that somewhere one time, you know. All right. So let's see here where we're at here. Well, we got a few more minutes. Suetonius. Suetonius. Sounds like something Phil Collins would say. Never mind. I digress. My mind just went back to the 80s. So anyway, Suetonius. But anyway. Let's see here. Let's go to Suetonius. Let's start reading. I'm going to go ahead and get some of his stuff up here. All right. And again, guys, keep in mind, remember, these are uninspired, non-inspired authors who are just reporting, you know, what they're recording, what they're seeing. Okay. Who wants to take that whole stuff there? That's not a lot to take on Suetonius. Who's got that?
Who's got it?
Vince, thank you.
Suetonius was born about the year 88 and was a friend of Pliny the Younger, who wrote the 12 Caesars. In his Life of Claudius, he says, because the Jews of Rome caused continuous disturbances at the instigations of Crestus, he expelled them from the city. This passage undoubtedly confirms Acts 18:2, that Claudius had commanded all the Jews to depart from Rome. This included Priscilla and Aquila, and proves that there were Christians in Rome as early as Claudius. In the life of Nero, whose reign began in 54 and ended in 68, Suetonius says punishments were inflicted on the Christians, a sect professing a new and mischievous religious belief. By referring to Christianity as new, Suetonius confirms our faith that the Christian religion did not arise in the time and place set forth, or that did arise in the time and place set forth in the New Testament.
Okay, now I've got here, guys, up on this first bullet, you know, Maxwell's book is the only one that I see where it's got 88 AD. Everywhere I've looked, it's saying 68, 69. I don't know if there's a typo. Could have been a typo, 88, 68. You know, someone could have hit the, you know, 8 instead of the 6. But anyway, nevertheless, you know, he was a Roman biographer. He confirmed in his writings about Claudius and Nero that Christians were banished from Rome and persecuted. And literally, you go back in Acts chapter 18 and read the first two verses, and we're introduced to a husband and wife. Who are they? Yeah, Priscilla and Aquila, okay? And we also see Claudius, you know, expelling the Jews from Rome, okay? And that's a historical fact. He's writing that. As a matter of fact, you go back, you look in Acts chapter 18, verses 1 through 2, and there it is. Luke just wrote about it, okay? So, you know, the things that we're seeing here, and he wrote a lot of things. He wrote a lot of books, Suetonius did. And it's interesting when he's talking about Nero, too, the life of Nero. He wrote a lot about the political leaders of his day. Let's talk. I don't think we're going to get through. I know we won't get through plenty. Let's just stop for a moment and just, you know, because we'll begin fresh, Lord willing, next week with Pliny and Pliny the Younger, and we'll talk about him. His uncle was Pliny the Older. Okay. Yes, Dale.
It's funny because he forced them out of Rome, and he was trying to do away with the Christians, but forcing them out of Rome just made for
it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny how that works like that, right? You know? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I think that the Christians, obviously, guys, if you're facing persecution like they're facing, you know, they were committed. They were all in. And like Paul, you know, Sunday we had a lesson with regards to Paul when he was in prison in Rome, in Philippi, you know. You came down to Acts or Philippians chapter 4, I think verse 22. What does Paul say in Philippians chapter 4, verse 22? Someone have their Bible? Read that. Just get over to Philippians chapter 4, verse 22. I hope that's right. I'm off the cuff. Go ahead, Dale.
It's funny because if you go back to the history of this country, every time we suffered persecution, the church grew.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
When it became lax, it
Exactly. Exactly. Someone have Philippians 4:22.
But especially those who are in Caesar's household.
Wow. Okay. Did you hear that? Paul said, now remember, he's a prisoner in Rome. All the saints greet you. Okay. But especially those of Caesar's household. Do you think that Paul was all upset and saying, I want my lawyer. You know, get Johnny Cochran on the phone. You know, you get OJ off and get me off. You know, I'll make my call. Get me out of here. You know, he didn't do that, right? You know, he didn't do that. You know, he was like, hey, look, you know, I'm going to make the best of wherever I am, whatever my situation, whatever my circumstances are. You know, I'm going to give God glory. You know, and that's what he did. Okay, Dale.
It's funny because all through this, if you wanted to go and address the Supreme Court, talk to them about the Bible, you couldn't do it.
Yeah.
You couldn't get the door. And if you wanted to go to some other place and do it, they wouldn't let you in.
Right.
But here, because they were charged, he got to preach to the Sanhedrin. Here again, he had people in Caesar's
Good point.
Household,
right. Know. Yeah. Whereas before he wouldn't have. Exactly. All right, guys. We got like a minute or two. You can, you know, rap, gab, talk to whoever you want to.
What was it, John, when they had the massacre in Jerusalem? They had a lot of fire.